Welcome to a very special Trench Chat. Not just one guest tonight, but for the very first time, three. So there's four of us here, and we've got something in common, that we're all Great War podcasters. So I've brought together what I would argue is the very best of Great War podcasters to talk about what we do, how we do it, why we do it, and probably quite a few other things besides during the course of our chat. So tonight we're joined by Mike Cunha, who does the Battles of the First World War podcast. Out of all of us, he's been podcasting the longest. I remember, Mike, listening to some of your Verdun material when I was down in Verdun during the centenary of the battle. So we're joined by Mike. We've got Terry Wenham. He's the youngest podcaster of us all. in terms of how long he's been doing it,
not age.
with his fantastic podcast looking at the stories of the First World War, and Matt Dixon with Footsteps of the Fallen, who I think you started around about the same time as me during that far off days of lockdown, which we can all thankfully only barely remember these days. So, Mike, Terry, Matt, thanks for joining me and welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Cool. So I kind of thought that the point of this really is, what is the point of assembling four podcasters to talk about podcasting? I think it's quite an interesting phenomena, really. I was looking at, because I'm about to move house, so I'm kind of packing stuff, and I was looking at some old copies of Stand 2 from the very, very early days of the Western Front Association. And that was kind of, you know, that was the old school way of kind of communicating interest in generating interest in the First World War, and here we are like 40 odd years later, and we're able to do this through the medium of podcasts. So I thought we'd kind of start off really, and maybe focus this around about half a dozen questions really, which will hopefully probably explain why we do what we do, how we do what we do, and kind of what we get from it, and what we hope our respective audiences get from it as well. So if we kind of start off with the first question, which is, what were our motivations for starting a podcast? And in those years that have followed since we started it, is this the thing that still drives you? And if it's not, how has that kind of changed? So, Mike, you've been doing this for the longest. I will kind of kick off with you, maybe, if that's okay.
Sure. So, first, Paul, I just want to say thanks for inviting me on. And it's really great to be considered part of this group of, like, I hold you guys in very high regard. Terry, I've never asked you, but I'm sure you're much like Paul and Matt, like you guys go without script. So I'm sure you go without script as well. That's not something I can do. I'm a terrible public speaker without like a script. So all of my podcasts are tightly scripted, like even the bad jokes. But the reason I got into podcasting was, so it was a combination of things. Like at the time I was working a job that I fairly hated. And I needed something to like kind of buck me up. So my long commutes, I was listening to these things that my buddy had told me about, these things called podcasts, and started listening to Robin Pearson, the Byzantium podcast, and then Mike Duncan's History of Rome, and the Crappy Job combined with this idea of stunning arrogance that I said, like, why, well, I could do one of these. And you know what? Like, World War I's coming up. It's kind of like your favorite subject. So you could do a podcast on World War I, and we'll go small. We'll do Verdun. We'll just start there. And I mean, you practically know everything about it already. And so it'll be super easy, you know? And you know, obviously it was not like it was a crap ton of work. So what I thought was going to be three episodes turned into 14 and 8 months of work, and, you know, like some 15, 20 books that are on the shelves there on Verdun. But so first I learned a great lesson in humility. Luckily, I never like actually told too many people that podcasting would be easy. I kind of kept it to myself. So, but I learned that lesson. But since then, you know, like after Verdun, I was really excited to cover the Psalm, which took me 2 years. And I just wrote the last episode for the Mirzargan series, which has taken up the last five. It's still very much like I enjoy the day job I have now very much so. So that's different, but I still come home and, you know, like I wake up in the morning and as soon as I come home, it's like, if I have to mow the lawn or something, it's like, all right, let's get this done so that I can have some time to work on the podcast. Like it brings me a great deal of pleasure to work on it at least a little bit every day. Yeah. And it you know, like I like to think that I'm doing what I can to carry on the memory of the men and women that we talk about in the Great War. And that as long as like my podcast is out there, then people can hear their names just a little bit longer. And that way that, you know, they can continue to live on in our collective memory. So the reaction I've gotten from folks around the world, I'm continuously humbled by, you know, how much they enjoy the podcast, but also like, you know, I've had particularly some British folks have been like, hey, thanks to you, I now have an idea of like why my grandfather was the way he was. So I like, wow, man, that's really moving. It's very moving for me. So that all of that helps motivate me daily.
And when you started, you were kind of a lone voice really in the kind of Great War podcast world. I mean, the kind of big hitters like Dan Snow and because I did the odd episode on the First World War, but there was you kind of broadcasting on your own. So you were kind of very much the kind of pioneer of this, as I see it.
Well, that's really nice. I appreciate it. Yeah. I guess the way my son used to work on a podcast himself. And he said, you know, I'm essentially writing the podcast that I want to listen to. So the way I do my episodes, it's the way I wanted to hear World War One get treated, like Verdun and the Somme and these weren't just these mindless battles of take this trench, take it back. There was a lot more to them, and there's so much more dynamic. And so I wanted to dive into a battle and take it apart, like detail by detail and event by event. And my goodness, like there's so much more to Verdun. There's so much more to the Somme. It was actually covering the Somme that I realized that there wasn't just the 1st of July. There was about 140 days afterwards as well. So all of them, you know, like just all of them fascinating, like such a like and studying something like the Somme as you go through July and August and September 1916, you're seeing like the British Army develop that steep learning curve that they had. Like they were much, much better on the battlefield at like by November, even though, you know, exhausted and a very expensive learning curve, but they were a better army. And you get to see that when you dive into something that deep. So yeah, but just making the podcast that I wanted to hear.
Well, good reason to do it. And Matt, for you, like me, you kind of started during that COVID period. But I'm guessing that you probably had a much deeper motivation for starting it than just the fact that we were sitting still for a while.
Well, I think really it came about. I mean, I've had a lifelong interest in the First World War. And I think one of the things that's happened as I've got older, that interest has changed from being an interest to being an absolute passion. You know, when I wake up in the morning, other than the normal things of, you know, getting the kids at breakfast and take the kids to school and things like that, I find myself that I start thinking about the First World War. And I say it became this overriding passion. And I think what happened really was during lockdown, I think, to be really honest, I think my wife was bored listening to me talking about the First World War to her and suggested that you don't talk about anything else. So perhaps why don't you record a podcast and then you go and talk to loads of people who'd really like to listen to what you've got to say rather than having to put up with listening to you sort of thing. So I went on to Amazon, and I bought a very cheap microphone because I really didn't know, to be honest, whether it was going to be my thing. I was going to sort of get into it. And 161 podcasts later, I'm still doing it. And, you know, it's become something that I almost look forward to each week to doing it. And for me, it's just, it never feels like work, I think, because it is such a passion. And I think the one thing that I would say to anyone who wants to record a podcast is find the one thing in your life that you are so passionate about. What's the one thing that you can bore the ears off anyone by talking about, that you know you get excited about talking about it? And if you find that subject, just record a podcast about it, because your enthusiasm and your passion will come through in what you're doing. And then it never feels like sort of work when you're actually doing it. And I think as well, one of the things that struck me more and more over the years as I've visited the battlefields is I have a real love for the cemeteries and the memorials, but I had this sort of moment where you suddenly stop seeing a row of headstones and you realize that every name there is somebody's grief. It's someone lost their, that someone's son, that was a family who grieved. And every headstone is a personal story to tell. And the Great War above all, about this huge change that it made to the world and social history and that sort of thing, it's a human tragedy. And I think we owe it to those men to keep their stories alive. And podcasting is such a wonderful way to be able to do that. And I think, you know, as I said, I'm in very distinguished company here. And when you listen to the podcast, you can feel that passion and that enthusiasm. And I think for me, if one person can listen to a podcast I've recorded and get that same feeling of love for the subject and an interest in history, then for me, even if it's just one person, then it makes recording podcasts on the Great War worth it. And that's why I do it every week.
And for you, Terry, I mean, you kind of joined, as it were, since I think you started towards the tail end of kind of lockdown, if I remember correctly.
It was 18 months ago now. I think it would be February of 22. Yeah, that'd be right, wouldn't it? Towards the end of lockdown. But it was listening, to be honest, to you guys, listening to your podcast and then discussing it with you. And what happened to me in my life was halfway through the lockdown in 2021, I decided to retire from work, take early retirement from work, and concentrate my retirement hobby, never a job, my hobby into, you know, researching and telling the stories of the men that died and served in World War One. Part of the way of doing that was to do battlefield tours and, you know, with yourselves at Ledgerpool and doing stuff on my own as well. And then one morning I woke up and I thought, well, I've got all these individual stories that I've researched over the last 20 odd years, and there's more and more coming in. Why don't I tell those stories? Because they're apart from the families that's asked me to carry out the research, no one's ever going to know about them. And I thought that recording a podcast would be a good way of doing that. But to be honest, there was another selfish reason why I wanted to do it. I was absolutely petrified of going brain dead in retirement. You know, at 56, I was younger than perhaps I could have been when I retired. I've got lots of friends that are retired in their early 60s. They don't do enough in their lives. And, you know, they have gone brain dead, or they're in danger of going brain dead. And it gave me the opportunity not just to tell the stories, but to learn new skills. You know, the first skill I had to learn was how to actually technically do it. And thank you, Paul, you know, without your help, there's no way I'd been able to do that. I didn't realise that it was actually quite a simple procedure, was it, to actually put together the podcast. The hard bit then comes trying to decide what to include in a podcast. And also, as we all know, what to leave out. And then how to deal with that criticism when we leave stuff out that other people don't like the fact that you left it out. So there's all those different skills that I learned. And it was it was a fantastic, still is a fantastic learning curve. Now, every week, just trying to think about what to do. And the other thing that I learned as well was, to start with, mine were quite scripted. You know, I had a running order, and I think in the first one, when I talked about my great uncle and my granddad, it was nearly all scripted. And then as I've gone along, and I've learned and I've become more confident, it becomes less and less scripted. And in the last few months, I've found myself out with a handheld microphone attached to my phone and describing what I can actually see on the battlefield, which again has tested my senses so much, because it's one thing seeing things, it's another thing actually being able to describe what you're seeing, isn't it? It's something that I'm still getting to grips with, to be honest. So I think there was two reasons why I wanted to start it off. One was so I had something to do that was going to test me. And secondly, you know, I always said that I would only get involved in this sort of thing if it's going to preserve the memory of these men and women that fought. And I thought that this would be, like you've all said, great opportunity to do that. We've all got that in common, haven't we? We're all approaching it in completely different ways. You know, in your case, Mike, you know, from the other side of the ocean, we're coming at it from completely different ways, but with the same objective, to preserve the memory of these people. And the other thing that I wanted to get into as well, I didn't want to tell the stories of the battles, because a lot of other guys, apart from you guys, there's other people that are doing that superbly in podcasts. So I wanted to tell the stories through the eyes of the soldiers that were there. And part of that story, of course, was going to be the Germans. And I wanted to give them a voice as well, the Germans a voice. Because, you know, their experience was in some ways different, in some ways the same as ours. But it's always fascinating, isn't it, to see how the war, how the battlefield was perceived from, you know, what they call the other side of the wire. So it really has been a fantastic learning curve to get it off. I think I've done coming up to 60 episodes now. And the other thing is, don't know what's going to happen in the future, do we, with all this? You know, how it's going to evolve. Will we still want to do it? Will we still have that enthusiasm? Because at the moment we have, and let's hope that continues.
I'm sure that's something we'll come back to. Sorry, Matt.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, though, Terry, when you say that, is that you have four podcasters on this podcast, all talking about the same subject, but they're all completely different to each other. And I think that's the wonderful thing about podcasts, is that there are so many different angles that you can take, so many different approaches you take. And I think they all complement each other, because everybody's style is different, everyone's delivery is different. And that's why I think it's such a democratic medium for people. It gives people a voice, and there's so much choice out there. And I think you're absolutely right that same subject, but four totally different approaches to it.
And I think as well, what we're all doing, hopefully, is we're being ourselves when we're doing this. Because we're, you know, all of us have got completely different backgrounds, completely different personalities, it's different skill levels. And sometimes you hear people in life, let alone on podcasts, that they're trying to explain something, but they're trying to be someone else, or they're trying to put an act on or something. And I think what makes a podcast not just about this, but about all other subjects, is when people are themselves, and their personality and passion, which you keep talking about, comes through. If you try and be something that you're not, then it will never work, will it, whatever you're doing?
No, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. It is one of those mediums where that if you were kind of trying to fudge it, really, or put on something, then people would soon kind of guess, which I guess brings me to question number two, which is, compared to other more, you know, kind of usual mediums of conveying the history of the Great War, what do we think that podcasts bring to our understanding of the subject, and what ways do they kind of explain it, perhaps differently or better or maybe not better compared to those more traditional mediums of books or TV documentaries or things like that? I don't know, I'd like to pitch in there first. Mike?
Things that I've found with this, sorry Mike, it is I think what I always try and aim for when I'm doing a podcast I'd like the person listening to it to feel as if I was walking alongside them at the time, where we were just having a chat, or sat in the pub having a beer together, having a conversation. And I think you're not there as a podcaster to lecture people. You're there to tell stories, you're there to educate people, but through the medium of conversation. And I think for me that's the most important thing, because people can read books and you get a very sort of factual approach to it, but podcasting is a much more personal medium than the written word. And I think the other thing as well, and I think Terry sort of alluded to this, is that when it's a spoken word, you feel the emotion and the enthusiasm for the subject much more than I think perhaps one would get in the written word, perhaps. That's certainly how I feel about it.
Yeah. Go on, Mike, you go.
No, so my thing is, when I began, you know, like having graduated from with my bachelor's in history, not too many years before, you know, there was, I knew that I was like just some regular guy now doing a history podcast. So you needed the books, I needed to do the reading, the research, and make sure that my information was as accurate as possible, knowing that there's going to be mistakes in there. But to really, you know, if I'm going to put myself out there like this, then I want to be as correct as possible, so that people get the right information. But, and it's funny, like I always approach it like I love reading. I love writing as well. So that's why part of the reason why I do the scripts is I just enjoy the writing process. And so doing that, like I do want to tell a story. I want to tell it in a casual, you know, somewhat conversational style that'll get people engaged and reading the excerpts of these letters, like you try to convey some of that emotion that the writers may have been expressing when they were writing it. But my goal is always like, I hope that people will listen to my podcast and be like, well, you know what? Like, I want to learn more about the Psalms. So they'll like, well, Matt, you know, Terry, Paul, like they do these podcasts. I'm going to listen to them too. And I also hope like folks will go out and get more of the books, like, you know, to support the authors out there. But also like to just read like, hey, like this is what I do, like, to get information. Like I bury my nose in a book and if you think the Psalm is that interesting, man, like there's tons of books out there. Like go ahead and dig deeper, you know, just get folks reading. Cause like Terry said, like, you know, keeps books sharp, you know? So, but yeah, like I just always trying to be accurate, but always like just trying to tell the story.
I think what podcasts give us, but nothing else does, is direct access to the whole world, to all the people out there. I mean, as Paul knows, you know, you worked in television and the media for many years. And if you want to produce a documentary or anything at all, you've got so many hoops that you have to go through. You know, you've got your finance and the production, TV companies and all the politics that goes on with that. And it's a long journey. It has been a long journey for you, isn't it, over the years? But with podcasts, anyone in the world, if you've got a piece of software and a microphone, you're away. You know, you can do it. You can access all these people. There's nobody to get in the way. It also, as opposed to the written word, it gives you the opportunity to do interviews and people can hear other voices and other people's passions and interests. You can interview people out on the battlefield like we've done. You could introduce sound effects as well. And I think the strange thing is for me that I still can't get used to is that when I sit down and start recording it, when I'm in the office where I am now, I feel like I'm talking to myself and I tend to forget I'm telling the story to myself. And I tend to forget that there's going to be, you know, so many people all over the world listening to it. And then when I get feedback from people and they come back, say, oh, I enjoyed that or whatever they say, it then comes as a surprise. I think, oh, blimey, someone else has heard that as well. You know, I still can't get used to the fact that I'm not just talking to myself. And I think that the other reason why people are so used to listening to podcasts now over the last few years is that they're used to listening to audiobooks. People take audiobooks on holiday or they take them to work and all these other places. I think the podcast is an extension to that, really. People are used to listening to that rather than reading things. But yeah, it's still, I wonder what's next, you know, what there'll be after podcasts. I suppose video, YouTube streaming and that sort of thing, which I know you just kicked that off, haven't you, Paul?
Yeah, I'm not doing kind of live streaming. I think I'll do online of that. I don't think the world's ready for that yet. But I think what you kind of hint at there, which is the portable nature of podcasts. I know you can carry a book with you anywhere, but I think kind of to think that you can kind of drive around in your car and you can, you know, connect your smart device to the speakers in your car and you could be driving down the Albert Bapaume Road or, you know, kind of going over the Passchendaele Ridge or taking the Meuse Valley, you know, up towards the northern end of the Verdun battlefield. And you could be listening to one of our podcasts while you kind of do it. That is really quite something. And I'm sure, you know, possibly some of you have had this as well. I've had people actually message me, email me from a field somewhere on a battlefield, say, I'm here now listening to that subject on that spot. And I think that's a kind of dimension to it as well. That is probably unique.
Definitely. Yeah, that is a strange experience, isn't it, when that happens? It throws me, to be honest, when that happens. It's only happened a couple of times to me where someone said, oh, I've got your podcast here and I'm standing in such a place. Oh, blimey, I've got it right.
I've had a couple of messages of people come through and say that, you open Google Maps and I follow on Google Maps where you're talking about the podcast, and it gives a completely different dimension to my understanding of how things were and locations. And it's wonderful to get sort of messages like that, because I think it adds a new dimension to people's learning and people's understanding.
I think that's a really interesting point as well, because I think a lot of people are put off by traditional methods of learning about any kind of subject, not just history, but probably about all kinds of things. And that certain people will respond to this kind of media maybe in a more positive way than they would do if they were structured in a classroom. Or perhaps that helps people think that actually I'd like to take this beyond just listen to podcasts and make it more structured, because, you know, I know there are many people now that do MAs, you know, and beyond MAs in First World War studies, which is a good thing. So kind of thinking about, I mean, we do a huge amount of research for the podcast that we put out there. And that's part and parcel of the kind of pleasure of it, but also the preparation of it. So question number three, then, what would you say that during this research, during your prep for and research for podcast ideas, what's your best discovery that you've made during that research, the discovery that's kind of hit you the most or impressed you the most or surprised you the most, maybe? How about you, Matt?
I think really for me, I mean, one of the things I always try and do is, I don't script the podcast, but what I do is I will jot down a few sort of bullet points and I think, I must talk about Fred or, you know, or that. And one of the things I always try and do is fact check things, because people, when you make mistakes, which we do, we're human, people are very quick to point out that you made an error or you were incorrect about that. I never do it deliberately, but, like, you know, it does happen. But I think for me, of all the podcasts that I've recorded, the one that I think changed my perspective about sort of studying First of all was the one I did recently about farming on the on the front line. The First War isn't all about bullets, bombs, trenches, barbed wire, etc. There was this whole sort of environment, and one of the things I think that's always fascinated me is how on earth do you support an army fighting a conflict of this scale? How do you provide it with everything that it needs to be able to fight on a daily basis? And it came about, as I said, because I have this gold medallion that I picked up, which is a prize for awarded the Le Havre Vegetable Show in 1918 for the man who won the prize for growing the largest cabbage. And I thought, what a wonderful thing this is. And I never thought. And then I started to sort of look more into it and discovered this whole thing about farming, the front and the army, agricultural companies and the auxiliary petrol companies who service the tractors, and this whole bringing farm machinery over from the UK. And then when the German offensive in 1918, they had to evacuate the tractors. And it was this whole thing that I'd never contemplated or never thought about before. And it's, for me, it's so exciting, this subject. There's so much to learn. And every day is a school day. You only have to go on social media and ask a question and you'll get 50 responses to it, and you learn something new. So I think of all the podcasts I've done, that was the one that, for me, that really got me excited, because it was something I'd never contemplated before. And people seem to enjoy it. I think it's not, as I said, it's not all bullets, bombs and barbed wire.
Mike?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that I've learned, of course, is just how much like that I don't yet know about World War One. Like, there's so much more to learn. And along like Matt's lines, like I'm reading a book right now, by Peter Belmonte. That's, I think it's called Bullets, Bandages and Beans. And it's about like supplying the AEF and you know, we're going to do a talk on it, but it's just like, I never thought like base camps would be like so fascinating, or that like the US Army had like, I think it was like the first coffee roasting company or something, like all of that stuff is fascinating. Like supplying the guys on the front line, but also like other aspects of the war that I have yet to dive into that I'd really like to. Like one, something that interests me a lot is, what was it like for the civilians behind German lines, like the occupied zones, particularly France? Like, you know, because I've read snippets here and there, and I know that the Germans could be pretty harsh, but you know, like life did find a new rhythm, like life went on somehow, and I'd love to find out more about that. So those are some areas. And then just coming across the continued like episodes of humanity that happened all throughout World War One. Like I've always been interested in World War One because I've always seen it as like that Victorian world was ending and the modern age was being born right there. But so you still had like these old world episodes happening, like when the German officers were let into Fort Vaux during the Battle of Verdun to negotiate the terms of surrender. They passed in one of the hallways, they passed French soldiers at attention, you know? So even in that time, like there was respect, like they had respect for each other. I've read many times about, this was during Verdun, a French position would be overwhelmed by German forces, and the survivors would be greeted by the Germans as like basically being like, wow, man, like you guys like really handed it to us. You guys did a great job, like fantastic, great defense, you know? And it was like, what kind of world are we in, you know? But this was what it was. And I just read of an episode at 10:30 on the morning of November 11th, out on the Meuse at a village called Loupy-sur-Loison. The 5th Division, the American 5th Division, was readying itself for one last attack up a hill. You know, you got 30 minutes left to this war. And so a German colonel walked out with a white flag, and he just said, hey, I just want you to know that I've got 65 machine guns on that hill. Like, I'm on to you. You can go ahead and send your guys if you want, or you can just kind of chill out for the next 30 minutes and we'll just call it a day at 11 o'clock. What do you think? What do you want to do? You know, it's up to you. And the American colonel was very flustered, you know, and very luckily he canceled the attack due to heavy fog. So like amazing. Just that colonel, that German colonel who, you know, you think of the Germans as like these, you know, like heel clicking Prussians, but that guy had great humanity to say like, look, enough, like we're almost done here. Come on, man. Like, let's go home. So I'm continuously fascinated by that. And that's something that always keeps me, that's another facet of like what keeps me coming back into World War One research, like exploring that humanity.
What a great story. Shani didn't put that one in the remake of All Quiet on the Western Front rather than the story they did put in about the 11th of November.
Yeah.
I think the first thing I'd say is I always, the portable microphone that I've got plugged into my phone, I take that everywhere with me whenever I go to the battlefields, because you never know when you're going to find a story, you know, just passing somewhere and you notice something. But I think I'll go back to my very, very first episode that I did. A Tale of Two Brothers was about my great uncle and my grandfather, who won the Distinguished Conduct Medal in 1915, and Henry died of wounds on the Somme in 1916. And the story goes that my granddad, Arthur, saw Henry lying on a stretcher the night before he died of his wounds. And then in 2016, I was the first one to go to Henry's grave, first one that had seen him for 85 years, first one from the family to go there. And then I returned with my dad a few years later. And I told that story, a story that I've told so many times on battlefield tours and doing talks to various people. But when I sat down and put that together in that very first podcast, It was a very strange emotional feeling. It was almost as though I was unburdened myself, you know, knowing that at last I was going to be able to share those two stories with the rest of the world. And it also took me back. I remember sitting here recording it, and it took me back to that day in 2001 when the Commonwealth War Graves Commission had only just put their records online and we discovered where Henry was buried. and standing at his grave in Buzincourt Communal Cemetery Extension, looking down at his name, seeing my name on his grave, seeing that he was 20 years old. And it was one of those moments in life that changed my life. So recording that first podcast took me back to that day in 2001. It took me back before that. It took me back to when I was a child and watching my dad, watching the Remembrance Sunday ceremony on the TV and asking him what it was all about. And he told me that we'd got an uncle that had died on the Somme. So it took me very much back in time, and it gave me that base, really, to go on and tell the other stories. And the other fittings I've had a few times is I've guided some Australian, two people from Melbourne that listened to the podcast, and they came over to the battlefields twice. And I've taken them around Ypres and around the Somme and to Fromelles and Villers-Bret. And I felt this massive responsibility. Here I am, a POM, taking Australians around Australian battlefields, telling the stories of Australians. When, of course, there's the controversy that some people, a lot of people in Australia, feel that, you know, the British generals were responsible for many of those deaths, especially at Fromelles. And I felt a massive responsibility to tell that story properly and to do them justice, which hopefully we did. And then what the other episode that I shall never forget was in the Anzac Rest Cafe at near Plug Street Wood, talking to Johan, isn't it? Johan, who owns that. And he was talking about the Australian soldier, Jack Hunter, that he'd found about 20 years ago, I think it was now, wasn't it? And just listening to Johan talk about that and the emotion in his voice, we were completely unaware of the people that were around us. And only when we finished recording Johan's thoughts, we turned around, there was a queue of people waiting to be served, and we hadn't even noticed. We were that locked in time in what we were doing. And also it's taken me to places that I didn't expect to go to. You know, I was in Germany recently, and I went to a place called Mainz, which is on the Moselle River, I think it is, or the Rhine, one of those rivers. And it was a prisoner of war camp. The citadel there was turned into a prisoner of war camp for officers. And I've got an account of one of the officers that was taken there, and I was able to follow his footsteps. Most of those camps, of course, were temporary camps that were demolished at the end of the war, but that citadel is still there and probably always be there. And to be able to follow in the footsteps and walk through that door and then read the accounts of how that door closed behind them, the big gate to the citadel, it takes you back. It puts yourself there. And I wouldn't have done that without the podcast. It really does open up new doors, doesn't it? Literally, in this case.
And by opening those doors, you're also, through the podcast, I guess this is another kind of reason, going back to some of our previous points, is you're opening those doors for the audience that then listens.
For other people, yeah. And then hoping that they will then make that journey themselves to these places.
Yeah, which I'm sure that's, well, I know that's the case for all of our podcasts. So one of the things that kind of interests me, coming on to question number four, is kind of, and I've said this a lot to people recently, it's about how, I guess, doing the podcast or thinking about the podcast has completely changed the way that I feel and view and in some respects almost understand the Great War. So I kind of, that's the question, really. How do you guys feel that doing the podcast that you've done has changed how you feel, how you view, and how you understand this subject? Mike?
So to me, visiting the MERS region now, like the years of really diving into the MERS-Argonne campaign of the U.S. Army in autumn of 1918, it now seems... I don't know. It the whole region is very. It's like I can feel the weight of memory there, and I know it's probably just me applying it, but in the MERS, it's pretty particular because the villages were rebuilt almost exactly as they were pre-war, and the fighting in some places was of a nature that it moved through fairly quickly, so you don't get the moonscape of Verdun and the Somme. You know, you definitely had smashed buildings, but they were all rebuilt and everything. So you get this, like, you get to step back in time. And so the villages of like Romagna, Soumont-Faucon, and Cunel and Nantua, like, they're all pretty much the same as they were 100 years ago, you know, and more in 1918. So you, and now, like, knowing what happened in these places, like knowing that you're at a crossroads in Sierre where a doughboy from Wisconsin was killed, you know, when he was working as a military policeman. Like, it's just like, oh my God, like it probably wasn't that different from what it looks like right now, you know, and just makes it real. And I just feel like so much more connected to the landscape, but then to the men who walked through. And like Terry was saying, like you feel a responsibility to tell the story as accurately as possible, and also to bring their words, try to bring life back to them so that people can understand what these guys went through. Like in the case of American Doughboys, you know, this summer I you know, we did the tours in France, and then I stayed on longer, and I managed, you know, I got to bring my wife out to the Meuse region for her first time, actually on at her request. She was like, you know, you talk about this place all the time, I want to see why do you love this place so much? And so we did, and I gave her the whirlwind tour, so I didn't like bore her to pieces. But when we went to the Meuse Argonne cemetery, you know, my wife, like she burst into tears looking at the 14,000, you know, marble crosses. And you know, she said, and it was really very touching, because she said, you know, like it's really cool what you do with the podcast, because like you're telling the story of these boys, because like what they did was amazing. Because like, you know, in the sense of like the American Doughboys, like these were like Tennessee farm boys, you know, guys from Chicago or Los Angeles or where, you know, all across the country, who had, you know, Italian immigrants who just arrived in New York City. Like they all donned their country's uniform and went right back over to fight the Kaiser and, you know, liberate France and Belgium. And, you know, these just regular kids, just kids, you know? And so that, yeah, it really, I feel with all the research, like I feel a much, much deeper connection now to reading about these guys and their lives. So I'm, you know, ultimately I'm just really, really grateful, and it drives me, like, you know, yeah, while I really enjoy this passion project, and it's also like there is that responsibility of like, yeah, let's do the best we can here so that we honor these guys correctly, you know.
How about you, Matt?
I think for me, one of the things that podcasting has done is it excites me about how much there still is to learn and understand about this conflict. And, you know, I think what's become apparent to me as I'm recording this is I know a bit about First World War, but I don't really know very much about it, because it's such a big subject and there's so much to tell. But I think very much like Mike, is you get invested in your subject. And, you know, I have a real love for Artois and the fighting of 1915 and the battles of Loos and Festubert and Aubers and Neuve-Chapelle. And I think understandably, as the British have an obsession or a particular interest with the Somme and Ypres, but for me, there's so much more to the Western Front. They were only two tiny parts of an entire long battlefield. And I think what it's given me is a real connection with that almost spiritual place on the battlefield that I find when I go and visit the lesser known, I call them the lesser known battlefields of the First World War, but the Aubers Ridge and Neuve-Chapelle and Festubert and that sort of thing. And it's given me a renewed, I think, sort of sense of enthusiasm about the subject to research it and develop my own knowledge. But I think also as well, it's the opportunity to perhaps introduce battlefield visitors to maybe an area that you would otherwise have just driven past on your way down to the Somme as you go down the A26 from Calais. But pull off, because within 5 minutes of the motorway, you're in the graveyard of the British Army in 1915, and everywhere you go, there's history. And for me, I think it sort of renewed that enthusiasm to learn more and tell more of the personal stories and some of the lesser known battles. I think that's really important, that we shouldn't always just focus on Ypres and the Somme. Of course, they were a huge part of the story of the First World War, but there's also an awful lot more out there. And I think that's what's, for me, that's one of the main things I've taken away from the podcast is just that rekindling, that enthusiasm to learn more and understand more.
And how about you, Terry?
Yeah, it's strange. When you asked that question, I thought, oh, blimey. And me being me, I have to scribble down my thoughts. Otherwise, I can't express them very well. And I haven't really thought about it until then. But while you've just been talking, I think that the word I've written down at the top of my page is it's personal. It's extremely personal to me, the way that I feel about the war since I've been doing the podcast, because it's allowed me to tell these personal stories of soldiers, some of which I have no connection to whatsoever, and others which I have connections with through the people that asked me to research them. So it's given me, you know, like a couple of weeks ago, I took my neighbours here in Northampton over to the battlefield. She was 92 years old, and I took her to see the grave of her grandfather, which she'd never seen. And that story will be told in one of the podcasts. And it gives me that personal connection with that soldier that I wouldn't have had I not been to that grave and not had to tell his story in the podcast. And it's also, the next thing is, it's allowed me, it's forced me and given me the opportunity to research some of the battles that I didn't know much about in more detail. Like, for example, the Battle of Neuve Chapelle. You know, it's part of that forgotten battlefield, isn't it, that Matt referred to there. A lot of people from Northampton, where I live, died in that battle. So I told the story through their eyes. And therefore, I learned so much about that very small battle through the eyes of the men in Northamptonshire. And it gives me, therefore, the opportunity, comes back to that word personal, of bringing these guys back to life. Maybe they've been forgotten about, and it's keeping their memories alive. That's the two things that we focus on all the time. Yeah, and I think also after the centenary, when that ended, and then, of course, we had COVID, we all worried about what would happen to the idea of visiting the battlefields and understanding and learning all about it. And I think the fact that these podcasts that we've all been doing have contributed towards keeping the interest in the Great War alive, again, it comes back to we've all contributed to that. And I feel that I have. And therefore, you know, it does feel very, very personal. And also, when I walk through that gate or that entrance at the back of Tynecot and it opens up, I've done several podcasts about Tynecot, about some of the soldiers in there, and we've had people on to talk about them. That really does feel now more personal when I enter places like Tynecot and Sayre Road number 2 and Teepvale Memorial. Because now, you know, I look at the names of those soldiers and some of their graves, and I think I really do feel as though I know him because I've told his story to a worldwide audience. And it feels like I've written down two words again, a privilege and an honour to be able to do so. And it all comes back, all those things I've mentioned come back to the first thing I wrote at the top of the page. It's extremely personal to me. It really is. And that's what, for me, I think that's probably the most important thing of all. You know, you feel like you've contributed so much in some small way, I suppose, so much in a small way to keeping these guys' memories alive. Even the ones that survived as well, of course, not just the ones that died.
I think personal is a good kind of expression for it, because each of us have put our own personality and our personal interest into the podcast that we've done, and I think that is a massive kind of strength of it, really. And I think for me, kind of, as I mentioned at the kind of beginning of this question, I really do feel as if it's kind of changed the way that I look at it. I mean, we've used this kind of reference to different aspects of the First World War, and layers is kind of one word that I often kind of say about it, and it's made me realize just how many layers that there are, and that they've kind of existed around me in isolation, and sitting down and kind of trying to bring some of this together through the podcast has kind of brought them all together in my mind. So it's kind of, I find myself every time I travel back out there now, I kind of seeing it almost with new eyes, you know. And I think certainly during, I don't know how you felt, but during COVID, you'd often wonder whether we'd ever get back there again, you know, kind of like that. And it was the nearest. I remember a couple of the First World War veterans that I interviewed during the Second World War, who had gone on trips to the battlefields in the 30s, and this strong compulsion to visit a particular grave, in their case, wondered if they would ever stand at their mate's grave again. And they did, right up until the last years of their life. But for six long years of war, they couldn't do it. And they thought, you know, maybe Nazi tyranny had swept across that land, there'd be nothing left of any of these places, you know. So yeah. I guess it was kind of our nearest spot to that. I can slightly get off the subject there a bit, but I think that's the thing. And I hope, and I'm sure, you know, through the work that we all do, perhaps through us seeing it in a different way, maybe the audience begins to see it in a different way as well.
I hope so. That's one of the reasons why we're all doing it, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, very much.
And kind of thinking of the kind of, I think we'll probably put kind of questions 5 and 6 in together, which are, what do we see? I think you've hinted at this, Terry, actually, you know, kind of what do we see as the future of World War One podcasts and perhaps beyond World War One podcasts? Where does it take us? And what kind of advice would we give to anyone listening to this who thinks it's, you know, kind of, excuse the pun, a monumental kind of project to take on to produce a podcast? What kind of advice would you give them?
I think I would say to anyone who wants to produce a podcast is beware, because it's really addictive, and you'll find that you think I'll do a few and then I'll do it. And in fact, when I started doing mine, I was talking to a very good friend of mine who runs a very successful podcast, nothing to do with First World, to do with running. And she actually said to me, she said, I warn you, you will get addicted to doing it. I said, no. And she was absolutely right. And I think really what we need, and it's fantastic to see, is just, if you've got something to say, just do it, just record it. The software is free. You don't need specialist equipment or anything like that. You just literally need a microphone, a computer, and it gives everyone a voice. And don't hesitate. If you want to do it, just do it. In fact, I mean, Paul, you were largely responsible for getting me podcasting, because I remember talking to you and you were like, just do it. Just record it, publish the first one. And sure enough, I did. I mean, I think we are very fortunate as students of the First World War. This is a bit of a golden age, really, I think, for First World War podcasts at the moment. And I think lockdown had a lot to do with that, because people suddenly had time to be able to donate time to it. I think it will carry on, and I think it will only keep developing, and I think you will get more people coming in and producing podcasts, and I think that's brilliant. The more we can have, the better, because as I said, like we talked about through this, there are 4 of us here and we're all completely different. We all bring a completely different sort of spin and different approach to it. So I think it will carry on. I think people have realized that podcasting is this very portable sort of medium. I mean, you listen to it on the train on the way to work, you listen to it in the car, you listen to it on the battlefield, and it brings the battlefield to life. And I don't think that will change. I think it will only get stronger. I think they will get more podcasts, and I think that can only be a good thing.
I think the first thing to say is I don't think that the podcasts, whether it's about the Great War, the Second World War, anything will ever end. I think it will just continue to grow, and it might evolve into something else. The technology might take us somewhere, you know. It's difficult to know, but we're never going to run out of things to talk about, are we, ever? You know, because, you know, yeah, I don't know about you, I have a whiteboard behind me that I write things down on, and it's forever growing. I'm never going to get to the end of that list, and neither will you guys. The advice I would give to people, like you've already said, is just get up and go and do it. And I want people to do it, because I don't know about you, I want to hear some more podcasts, because I still think there's relatively few, aren't there? There's us 4 doing it, there's a few other people doing it, and you've got the professionals doing it. There's so many more people out there that could do it. You know, we meet these people. They've got so many stories to tell us. Let's have some more people doing it. That's what I say. And also do what we've done. And that's ask, if you are going to set up a podcast and do it, don't do it on your own. Get advice. Get advice from you guys and from other people as well. And there's lots of advice, of course, on the internet. You can go into YouTube as you can on everything else and learn how to do it. But don't try and do it alone. And I think the other thing that I've written down here that I want to know, I mentioned this at the beginning, what do we call a collection of podcasters like us? We haven't answered that question yet. And also, I've got a suggestion from my wife, who suffers like they all do at the hands of me rattling on about World War One and podcasts. And she suggested what a good idea I should do one day is a day in the life of a podcaster's wife. And that would bring in a completely different audience. So I've resisted the temptation to do that. But yeah, I really, and she wants to know what we call a collection of podcasters. So answers on a postcard, please.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll put that out there to the audience as well. But podders, I don't know.
Podders.
I think my wife would be more than happy to join your wife to have a gin and tonic and discuss this in more detail.
It could end in tears, Matt. It could end in tears.
Yeah, yeah, but we could talk about the First World War whilst they're doing it. So it'd be, you know, win-win all round, really.
Yeah, and my wife as well, and I will... Yeah, happily say that my daughter, who's a high school student, she knows more about the Somme than most Americans do. So,
really?
Yeah, and she's just a teenager. So,
right.
As far as like the future of World War One podcasting, like, yeah, I think, now is a real golden age of research. There's so much stuff coming out. I mean, something that comes to mind like right away is Dr. William Philpott. Like he just released co-authored a book on French generals, which I've been thinking, part of my interest in World War One is the French experience, and that the barrier of not reading and not speaking French fluently like limits what how much I can access French memoirs and histories, which there's so much there, although Google Translate does help kind of bridge that at least a little bit. But there's so much stuff coming out. Like I was like, gosh, I wish like there would be something more on the French army coming out. And then, there you go. Here's a book by Philpott coming out on French generals. And it's like, oh my God, thank you. And so I think that's going on. I've got to say, like, I'm, very happily a member of the Western Front Association. They're continuing to, you see new articles coming out all the time in their journals. But also I'd like to highlight the work of the Great War Group with Alex and Beth. I mean, those, I think I'm at the age where I can say like those kids are just, they're such a force to be reckoned with. And there's so much enthusiasm coming from them and everyone in that Great War Group. It's so cool to see what's going on. And that they're carrying on that research of the Great War, and they're, they're passionate as well. So to see that continue on, also like, as far as anybody like wanting to get into podcasting or something, like, yeah, definitely ask around, ask someone who does a podcast, how much work it is. But, to go back to what Matt said, like, definitely, like, if you're passionate about something, like, get out and just do it, and just do it, because, like, the world needs passionate people, because, like, passionate people are fun and exciting to be around and to listen to, and they're they motivate you as well. So when when I hear your podcast, it's just like, oh my God, like, I need to find out more about Auber's Ridge, like, right now. So, to hear stuff like that. So definitely, like, the world needs passionate people. So if you're passionate about something and you want to tell the world about it, just do it. Just do it.
I think that's a really good point you've made there, Mike, because with this age of social media, X or Twitter, whatever it's called in particular, there is so much, poison, I suppose, out there. Is there's so much anger and destruction that we see all around us on social media in particular, and the podcasts that we do and other people do are so positive that it makes you feel positive when you listen to a podcast. It makes you feel positive and enthusiastic about life, and also grateful and humble about what's gone on before. But it's an antidote to the rubbish that we see around us on social media. It really is. That's a great word, actually, about passionate.
Yeah, I often think about social media and you definitely you see the negativity out there, of course, but I've also I try to think of the positives that I've reached, and so it's like wait a minute, I you know, how has social media affected me? Like, of course I see the negative stuff, but then it's like, I have connected. Well, I mean, I'm speaking to you three right here, and that's due to social media. You know, us connecting, you know, through Twitter and Facebook and everything. You know, I've had dinner with Matt in London, in person, face to face, like, because of, you know, social media. I've spoken, this past weekend I spoke with a gentleman in France, you know, because like he listens to the podcast and we just talked on the phone. And it's like, this is amazing, you know? So as much as there is negativity out there, I also think, like, you know, podcasting and social media, like, it's also connected me with other enthusiasts who are just as passionate as I am. And it's, you know, it's so uplifting to, you know, to hear somebody connect with me and be like, hey, Mike, I got to tell you about this because my wife is tired of hearing about this. And I'm like, absolutely, man. Like, tell me, I want to hear it. So
I think the more you do that, you can then, you fill your brain with so much positive stuff, so much passionate stuff, you can ignore all the rubbish that's going on in the background. And that's the way I look at it.
I think it's absolutely right, though, is that one of the things for me that's been a huge plus of podcasting is this connection with this amazing group of people on social media, on Twitter. I will always call it Twitter. I refuse to call it X. It's Twitter, and it always will be. But I've made some amazing friends in real life through doing a podcast where you connect with people, and it's that shared passion. And I think that on the whole, the Great War community and the people who are interested in the Great War are decent people, and we all share that this enthusiasm for this amazing period of history. Of course, yes, there are, like any walk of life, there are people who maybe view it slightly differently, and it's an opportunity to debate and argue and things like that. But on the whole, I think the Great War community is very welcoming, very friendly, and I think what it's done for me now, I know that if this question I've got about First World War, I could put it on Twitter, and within 5 minutes, I'll have had 10 responses, and you know that it's probably going to be correct. But I think it's just one other point as well to make about podcasting, about people who may be apprehensive. The podcast community is just as supportive as the First World War community. It's a wonderful community of podcasts out there. Just ask a question. If there's something you're not sure about, you'll get 50 people who genuinely want to help, because it's such a wonderful sort of medium, such a great thing to do. So just do it. Get a microphone, talk, and let's have more First World War podcasts.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. And, you know, we kind of mentioned, I mean, you mentioned the Great War group there, you know, with championing a lot of female historians. We need a lot more of those kind of voices coming through. And I mean, at the moment, you know, we kind of know that we pay for a host to host our podcast. And some people, that is a bit of a barrier. There are some podcast hosts that offer kind of free services. But it kind of looks that in the very near future, YouTube will be allowing people to actually host podcasts RSS feeds, which is the feed that you kind of draw everything from, for free. So, you know, if that happens, you know, I would hope and really encourage anyone listening to this, that's your kind of moment to step out.
Well, it removes a barrier then, doesn't it, if that happens?
Yeah. But they're up and coming. I mean, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but Caitlin DeAngelis, who's got this fantastic book coming out about the gardeners, Commonwealth, or the Imperial Wargraves gardeners who went through the Second World War. She's just launched the podcast, telling some of the stories that she couldn't put in her book. And again, kind of perhaps going back to some of the things we've discussed, I kind of think, having written a few books myself, there's so much you leave out. You can't get all this kind of stuff in a book. You know, I'd say to authors out there, you've got files of research that you've not used for something. Get in there and do a podcast, because it's not, I'm sure we'd all agree, it's not going away, is it? Podcasts are kind of part of the mainstream now, and all kinds of levels. Absolutely. And I was reading kind of in The Guardian that there's lots of celebrities doing podcasts, but they kind of rotate around the same podcast again and again. And people are veering away from them and searching out more and more unique content, which is, I guess, is where, you know, us with the Great War and many other people doing other subjects kind of come in.
I think the difference is, Paul, in that example that you just mentioned, is that those celebrities are promoting themselves all we're doing is telling the stories of those that went before us. This isn't about us, is it? These podcasts are not about us as individuals. That's the difference.
No, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, I think, you know, you can't help but be humbled really by this subject, can you?
No, that's right. I ought to, while I get the chance, talk about the platform and hosting platform. Is that the right phrase for it, you call it? Mm-hmm. And Tales from the Battlefields, my podcast, is hosted by the Army Benevolent Fund, ABF, the Soldiers Charity. They do their own podcast. And so they set it up and cover the cost for me. So they ought to give a good credit to the Soldiers Charity, which I'm one of the fundraising ambassadors for. So thank you for reminding me of that.
No problem. I know you do a lot of work for that too. And I think that's the other thing is, I mean, Mark, I know you were in the military. Kind of veterans is a really important kind of thing that drives all of us veterans of the past, but kind of veterans aren't just in the past. There are veterans now that kind of need the same sort of assistance that veterans after the Great War would have loved to, possibly or certainly needed that kind of thing. So it's good to kind of connect with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I think of a lot of the, like, you know, one, you know, kind of sad case is Lieutenant Colonel Charles Whittlesey, the commander of the so-called Lost Battalion. In my buddy Rob is going to be mad at me because I'm off on the year. It was 1921 or 1922. Lieutenant Colonel Whittlesey committed suicide. Like his experiences were too much for him. And so I think of that. And then I think of here in the US, we have on average, you know, I believe it's sometimes it's 22 veterans a day who take their own lives. And so it's like, you know, like that to me, those two things are very connected in it. And it's like, you know, if I can say anything, like if you're listening to this podcast, if you're a veteran, if you're feeling anything like that, like, please, please, please go get help. Like, you know, and please talk to someone. Like, please, you don't have to, you don't have to suffer alone. Like Lieutenant Colonel Whittlesey did, you know, like the supports weren't in place at those times. And I think, you know, it was his own particular circumstances, but like for, please, please, please go talk to someone. Like there's,
and the same goes in the UK as well. You know, I don't know what the numbers are, but we've still got Northern Ireland veterans, Iraqi veterans, Afghan veterans, and, you know, even guys that didn't see conflict, they're coming out of the army and they just can't cope with civilian life. And that's what the ABF is there for, to help these people. They do it in lots of different ways. It's never a handout financially. It's always a hand up to try and get people into housing, into jobs, into education. And that's what inspires me to be a volunteer for them. As a civilian, I always said that when I went into doing this, I would only do things that are going to help remember the soldiers of the past that have gone, or help soldiers of today. And being part of the Soldiers Charity, that's what motivates me to do that. I see it firsthand every time I meet these veterans. I'm completely in awe of them, to be honest. You know, no matter what they've done, what experiences they've had. Paul, you know some of them that you know, work as guides at Ledger, and they're inspirational, aren't they? They really are. And you know, I feel as a civilian, I owe them so much, and always will.
And I think as well, I mean, I kind of, we kind of touched on this in a recent chat with Professor Peter Doyle, the kind of resonance with events in Ukraine, because you know, here are three of us on the western side of Europe, right over on the other side of Europe. There's a war on European soil taking place right now, in often, you know, as particularly as we creep towards the winter, conditions very similar to things that we've discussed about the Western Front, you know, on all of our podcasts. I think for me, it's made me really kind of think about that some things kind of never change, that there is the same experiences of soldiers and the problems with what war does to a landscape and to an entire generation. Is not confined to the pages of the past. It's still very, very relevant even now.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems with history is we haven't learned the lessons of history, and that's, you know, we've gone full circle, and we'll just keep going full circle, won't we? That there'll always be war because no one has learned the lessons of the past.
So as a kind of final shot then, Is there anything you'd kind of like to just add, really, or say about your podcasting experience, or kind of looking ahead where you see yourself going with it, or kind of anything, really, just to round things off?
I'll say, like, again, like, podcasting has been really fun, really fun, like, being able to read, research, and write. Just as a hobby, like, and it is like a real passion. So again, for those folks, like, if you're into, I don't know, the French Revolution or something not even history related, like, just go for it, you know, go for it, and just go ahead and ignite that passion. And also if you're just happen to be listening to a podcast, but, you know, maybe you're thinking about something not podcast related, like, I don't know, I want to start doing CrossFit, or I want to start, I don't know, taking up whatever, painting, like go for it. Just do it. Try it. Go for it. You'll be happy when you do. And the final thing I'd like to tell folks is, like, listen to Paul's, Matt's, and Terry's podcasts. Like, they are fantastic. So you guys will really learn a lot. It's going to be awesome.
Matt?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I would agree with that. And I think, Paul, obviously, thank you very, very much today for the opportunity for us to come on to your podcast. And I think we all, every single one of us, have to congratulate you on the just remarkable and very much deserved achievement of over 1 million downloads for The Old Frontline. I think every single one of us who produces a podcast on the First World War, we've got a really high benchmark to aim for, because I think you do set the standard for First World War podcasts, and just congratulations to you. It's a hugely deserved, and so just a remarkable achievement of 1 million downloads. So many congratulations, and job well done.
Well, thank you, Matt. That's very kind of you. You know, I just kind of feel as if we're all kind of in this together. You know, when you kind of think of organizations like Comrades of the Great War, and how men felt they could kind of add this common bond, I kind of think we have as well in the task that we're doing, and the way that we're trying to get people engaged with this history. But thank you. Terry, how about you?
Well, obviously, I echo everything that everybody has said, and it's been fantastic tonight to meet everyone. I think what's coming through, and in your voices, and I can feel it inside myself, is the emotion and passion that we all feel about not just the podcast, but about each other as well. The comradeship, I suppose, that you touched on there. And again, it's just thought about this has been going along, that not only have I enjoyed the podcast and I've learned all these new skills, but it's also added more depth and knowledge for when I've been doing battlefield tours as well. And when I've been going around doing talks to schools and things like that, it's given me, I don't know, more empathy, confidence. I don't know what the word is, but it's added, what I'm trying to say is he's added so much, and long may that continue. And that's why I keep saying it, but we really do want other people that are listening to this to have a go themselves. What's the worst that can happen? You know, nothing. There's no worst case scenario, is there? You know, let's keep it going. Let's move this on from strength to strength.
Absolutely. And this time we've recorded this from afar. Here we are in our isolated corners of the world. But I really kind of sincerely hope that we'll do this again, but actually on the ground itself. Yeah.
Absolutely. Brilliant.
So thank you all, gentlemen, for joining me tonight, and thanks for our chat. I hope, and I'm sure this will have been interest to those who listen to us. If you don't listen to Mike, to Terry, or Matt, what the hell have you been doing for the last few years? Come on, listen to those podcasts, because everything, we all kind of supplement and support and I think really reflect on the kind of wider subject that binds us all together. And I'll be putting links to all of your podcasts on the podcast website, so people can find those if they can't find them via normal means. So thanks again, guys. And let's do this again on the Old Front Line.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
You've been listening to an episode of The Old Front Line with me, military historian Paul Reed. You can follow me on Twitter at SomCorps. You can follow the podcast at Old Front Line Pod. Check out the website at oldfrontline.co.uk, where you'll find lots of podcast extras and photographs and links to books that are mentioned in the podcast. And if you feel like supporting us, you can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/oldfrontline, or support us on Buy Me a Coffee at buymeacoffee.com/oldfrontline. Links to all of these are on our website. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon.